Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, Lisa Gray. Lisa Gray is a couples therapist in private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, specializing in high conflict couples and chronic illness. She graduated from JFK University in 2004 with a master's degree in clinical counseling and has been working in the field ever since. Lisa is passionate about teaching couples to practice healthy conflict so that their relationships can thrive and grow. Lisa reads over 100 books a year and reviews self-help books on her Instagram, Therapy Book Nook. She came on to the show to talk about her newest book, Healthy Conflict, Happy Couple: How to Let Go of Blame and Grow Stronger Together. It was such a wonderful conversation and a pleasure to have her on. So without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me on the show.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And I'm so happy and excited that we're here to hear about this new book that you have on having a healthy conflict. But before we get into that, I have to ask you about your reading habits and some of the things that you have learned. You know, you always read those like studies that people like reading less and less. And I think like half of Americans haven't even read a single book this year. Right. And you read over 100 books a year, and you review these self-help books on your Instagram and your blog, the Therapy Book Nook.
Yes.
So, you know, when most people don't even read any books a year, what motivates you on this path of reading?
Well, I've always loved to read ever since I was a kid. And all the 100 books are not all the self-help books. It's a mixture of fiction. You know, I like to disassociate into a good fiction book as well. But it's just something that I really enjoy. So I do want to make it clear, like, there's no guilt trip for people who don't want to read or don't like to read. I don't think reading is like a necessary thing to do, but I don't watch TV. It's just not something that I enjoy. So when most people are watching, you know, shows or sports or whatever, I'm probably reading. And I also read very fast. Just lucky that way. So yeah.
Oh, nice. So yeah, you don't read just self-help books, because that might just be much, but you do read a lot of them, and a lot of ones related to therapy. So you've already been working as a therapist for a long time, supervising other therapists. Are you still learning new things?
Oh, absolutely. I hope I never stop learning new things. You know, it's like there's just so much information to accumulate and know, and there's always new stuff coming out and different ways of saying the same things even. But, you know, sometimes when someone says it in a bit of a different way, it lands different. So I just love to learn, and I hope I never stop for sure.
Well, me too. And that's why I started this podcast, Learn to Love podcast, because I love learning. I love learning about love. And out of some of the books and people that you love to learn from, what are some, you know, really nice take-home themes and lessons that you found?
You know, one of the things is that just culturally, we have this idea that if I fall in love with someone and we really love each other, that's enough. That's going to carry us through. And that's a great fantasy, but it's not really the reality. And, you know, loving someone comes naturally, but having a good relationship is more like a skill. And what I tell, like, even my kids is the information is out there. We have the information about how to have great relationships and healthy relationships. Don't assume that just because you love someone, your relationship's going to be great. Spend some time learning how to actually do it right.
I love that. Loving someone comes naturally, but having a good relationship is a skill.
Yeah.
So you said all the information is out there, and I agree. There's a lot of information out there. And I'm curious, do you have like a top 5 books or top 3 books? Or are you with your clients or your couples that you work with? Are you like, here's what you need right now. Is there a common resource that you often recommend the most?
Well, I do love Stan Tatkin's work. So Stan Tatkin wrote the book Wired for Love. He's got several other books, but his book blends relationship skills with attachment theory in a way that's really easy to understand for people. And of course, Gottman's books, all of John Gottman's books are kind of the nuts and bolts of relationship building and all based on research. And then if you like the emotionally focused area, then Sue Johnson's books like Hold Me Tight. Those are all classics. And so those would probably be in my top five, but also do want to say that there's a lot of smaller, you know, those are the big guns in the therapy world. And there's a lot of smaller unheard voices that have a lot of really wonderful things to say as well. So that's why I like to read so much, because I feel like there's a lot of undiscovered gems out there.
Absolutely. Like yourself.
Exactly. Hopefully.
Yeah, it has been really fun being on the podcast and listening to great authors like yourself who maybe aren't the million top sellers, but still have really great insightful wisdom to share. So because you know the information that's out there, there's always this temptation, you know, anytime we say write a book, like, oh, this has already been written yes. about before. There's no reason to write another book about it. So with the content that you notice that is out there, what compelled you to write Healthy Conflict, Happy Couple?
Yeah, that's actually what stopped me from writing a book for so long. You know, everything's been said, everything's been done. You know, why, what's there left to say? But I will say about, it was before the pandemic. So maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I had a couple. And there's all these great relationship books out there, but I didn't want a book for them about kind of like the totality of their relationship. I wanted a book that only covered conflict, that like would walk them through step by step by step how to conduct a conflict. And all of these books I've mentioned have a chapter on conflict or a section on conflict or pieces of conflict, but it wasn't like a step by step, you know, do this and then do this and then do that. I just couldn't find that book that had a step-by-step conflict map. So when we did lock down for the pandemic, I thought, well, I'm just going to write down, you know, all the things that I tell my clients all the time and see what happens. And it turned into this book. So yeah.
That's wonderful. So I'm not going to lie. I know your book is meant to be read from beginning to end. It's the step-by-step that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But as soon as I opened it, I popped over to chapter 8, Common Issues Between Couples, because I wanted to see if my own relationship problems were unique to me and thus meaning I'm doing something wrong or something every couple deals with. So in this chapter, you cover chores, money, in-laws, parenting, and sex. It's like, is that the top five that you find?
I would say that's the top five. Yeah. I mean, there's a huge chunk of my couples that what they're arguing about, the topic of their argument, I will say, is one of those five, some variation on those five, you know? Yeah.
So majority of the people that come into your office, like these are the things that are coming up.
Yeah. I mean, it's both and, right? I mean, these are the top five topics. And also every couple is entirely unique and there's never been a couple like that before. And so, you know, you can have these top five themes, and you can also have just a completely unique situation or approach or discussion about that. So I just wanted to cover kind of like the top things that I've heard, you know, so many times that might be helpful, but each couple is going to have their own variation on that.
So I also think it's interesting that your book isn't titled No Conflict, Happy Couple.
Yeah.
Because you write that conflict is a skill, but also that healthy relationships actually require conflict to thrive. So why is that? How can we view conflict as a good thing?
Well, I think it's one of the crucial attitude shifts that has to happen if you're going to have healthy conflict, is that you have to start to look at conflict as a good thing. So the example I sometimes give is, you know, if you and I are in a relationship and I'm annoyed with you this morning, but I don't want to have a conflict, so I don't tell you why I'm annoyed, or I don't tell you what you're doing that's bothering me, then you go to bed tonight knowing me a little bit less than you knew me when you woke up this morning, you know? And that might not seem like a very big deal, but if you times that by 20 years, you know, 365 days a year, there's a lot that now you don't know about me, because we're not having those conversations, because we're afraid of conflict. We're not really revealing who we really are. And those are the couples that come to me 20 years later and just say, like, man, we've drifted apart. We don't have anything in common anymore, you know, sadly.
So couples that say that they're drifting apart have probably had a long pattern of not sharing what's going on with them. So that the distance just increases over time.
Yeah, it just becomes a wasteland because, you know, we're afraid to say what we really think, what we really feel. And there's no, we don't have a setup, like a platform for how to do that. And so it seems like a very scary thing to do. But if you learn healthy conflict, it starts to actually be kind of exciting. Like, I'm going to learn something new about my partner when we sit down to have this conversation. That should be a good thing.
Well, it should be a good thing. It sounds really nice. Because, you know, it's interesting that your example was annoyance. Like, if I'm annoyed, but I don't tell you that I'm annoyed. Because I'm imagining, like, two situations. One, no one wants to be told that they're annoying, especially by someone that loves them. You know, be like, yeah, by the way, I find you pretty annoying. Uh-huh. But also, you know, we have this phrase like, oh, that person really pushes my buttons. And, you know, to what extent is my annoyance about me and not actually about my partner at all?
Yeah. Well, you know, in every relationship, there's a beauty and a skill of letting things go. You know, you can't address every single little annoyance that comes up for you every single day. Like you're saying, some of that is about the other person's just having a bad day or you're having a bad day. So there is a little bit of a skill to discern when you should have a conflict or not. So even though a conflict I consider to be a good thing, there are some things that you can just let go and, you know, don't really need to be addressed. It's not so much about who you are as a person that you're not revealing to your partner. It's more like, you know, if they want to put the toilet paper over and I want to put it under, maybe I can just let that go, you know?
That would be nice.
Right, exactly. It's a special skill to know what things are important and what things aren't, you know? One of the things I say is that, like, sometimes when something is annoying me, I take a note of it and maybe don't address it right then. But if I notice that it's becoming a theme, like there's these things that annoy me and it's a theme of disrespect or it's a theme of selfishness or whatever it is, then that's worth a conflict because that's more of a theme in our relationship than just an irritant. So sometimes I give that as a barometer of when to know whether something should be a conflict or not.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love how you phrased it, that there is a beauty and a skill in letting things go.
Yeah.
And one thing that's come up on the podcast is the sort of approaches we have to conflicts, and that one person tends to be the pursuer and the other one tends to be the avoider. So
Yes. The
drifting apart that you mentioned tends to happen with avoiders, those that do avoid conflict and think that if they don't talk about it, it's not happening. But the pursuers and the people that confront their partner continuously also tend to create conflict. Then conflict turns into arguments and blowing up and more intense, I might even say, disconnection that really is emotionally charged. So what about that kind of situation?
I think that dynamic, the whole pursuer-withdrawer dynamic, has to do with a little bit of fear and anxiety on both ends. You know, so the person who's an avoider of conflict likely has had very bad experiences with conflict, either observing conflict as a child or just their own personal experiences with conflict. So if conflict has been very painful and unproductive, then you're not going to want to do that. So it's based in a little bit of fear. And if that person can be assured that conflict doesn't actually have to be that painful and can actually be productive, then they're a little bit more willing to step forward. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the person who's pursuing, that's about anxiety of like, we have to resolve this. This needs to get resolved. I can't just be hanging here without this resolution. And what that prompts that person to do is to address the problems in the moment as they're happening because they're feeling anxious about it, which is actually the very worst time to be having a conflict when you're already mad. It just doesn't work. So, you know, so I think it's about kind of giving this couple a roadmap where the conflicts are set up correctly so that they're not happening when you're already mad. It's not an ambush. It's not anything like that. And then the withdrawer has a roadmap to know that this conflict isn't going to blow up and is going to be productive. And then both people can play a more productive role.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The fearful person is avoiding conflict because they're afraid of what's going to happen. And the anxious person needs to address it as a way to alleviate their anxiety.
Right. Right. Or sometimes they've just been told that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I mean, I can't even count how many weddings I've been to where they're like, don't go to bed mad. I'm like, that's terrible advice. You know, when you're super mad, you should not be having an argument because nothing's going to get solved. You know?
Okay. So what do you say? It's okay to go to bed mad?
Yeah. What I would say is to say to the partner, like, this is something that needs to be discussed. We don't want to avoid it. Let's set up a time to talk about that. You know, let's talk about that tomorrow at lunch, or let's talk about that in the morning when we wake up. Let's get some rest because that's really important for creative problem solving. And then let's agree to talk about this topic when we are our best selves, which is not right now.
Yeah, I'm a little curious because when I think about, that fear and anxiety, I do think about the inner work that we need to do to look at our own past patternings and our upbringing. And I'm curious, does this work of relationship, there's this building skills in relationship. How much of this is done on my own? How much is this done specifically with my partner? And when do I might want to bring an outside party, such as a therapist? And the outside party could work, again, with just me.
Yes.
Or they could also work with the couple.
Yes. Well, I think that it's important. You know, so many of my clients are like, I don't want to talk about my childhood. You know, we don't need to go back to my childhood. Unfortunately, when it comes to conflict.
Sounds like avoidance.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, with relationships and conflict, we don't have any other barometer to judge what we should do except for our childhoods. Like, we don't get a class in high school or college on how to have good conflict or how to have great relationships. What we have is what we saw growing up. And that's about it, you know? So it is really important to do your personal work and to at least be aware of what you learned growing up, you know, at least be aware of what you may have observed and learned either intrinsically or, you know, straight up being told, but you learned something about relationships and conflicts in your childhood, and you're carrying that with you. And that's work that I think individually is really helpful to understand what you might tend towards when you're having a conflict. And then, you know, each person then is going to come with a set of beliefs and behaviors and conflict styles. And so that work is going to have to be done together. How do we blend these styles? How do we make sure that these styles work together so we're supporting each other in a conflict instead of working against each other? And, you know, a third party is always useful. So I'm sure you know that statistic that John Gottman has that people wait 6 years after they realize they're in a serious problem before they go to therapy. And that's just way too long. So I love working with couples who come early in their relationship and then we establish a good structure and then they can come back whenever they hit a road bump. And that's, to me, is the best way to do it.
Yeah, I love that emphasis on cultivating awareness of our own stuff. So at least we know what we're kind of bringing to the table when conflict does arise. But the reason that conflict is arising is because of our partners. So that work on solving the conflict does have to be done together.
Yeah.
So you mentioned towards the beginning that our conflicts need to be set up correctly, which I assume is like the first step on the step-by-step on how to have a healthy conflict. So how do we set up our conflict correctly?
So I like the concept of making an appointment to have a conflict. And people always push back on this with me because they're like, why would we want to have a conflict on a perfectly good Saturday morning when nothing's happening, you know?
Exactly.
But
ignorance is bliss, right?
right, yeah. But the problem is that if you only have conflicts when they're happening, these are the couples that come in and say, we have been arguing about the exact same thing for 10 years and we've never solved anything. And that's because they're only talking about it when they're really mad. And they're because of that, they're in their kind of fight or flight brain. They're saying things they don't really mean. They're not in touch with like their goals for the conversation. So I'm always saying it's kind of like an investment. If you say, and every couple knows what their issues are. You know, if I ask any couple, what is it that you argue about? They know. It's not like they don't know. So you could say to your partner, hey, you know, we've had some issues with finances lately. I'd really love to talk to you about it. I'd like to have a good conversation about that. What's a good time for you? So then your partner might say, let's do that Saturday morning over breakfast. Great. You set that up. Now both people know what the topic is. They know what the purpose of the conversation is. They know when it's going to happen. And if you need to, you can set like a time limit so they know how long that conversation is going to be. And both of you are in, not in your fight or flight brain. You're in your most creative problem solving brain when you're having that conversation because you're calm. So that setup just, it's almost the most crucial part because it sets you up for a productive conversation before you even start talking about the topic.
It's interesting. I'm just wondering a little bit more about the logistics. Like, one, I'm wondering, should this be weekly? Like, Wednesday at 5 o'clock is our conflict resolution time. And I'm also wondering if there's a particular environment or way of doing it. Like, you could just say, oh, well, we drive to the in-laws every Friday and it takes 90 minutes. That's a wonderful time to work through conflict. Or does that, you know, not being able to face each other, not be conducive to solving the problem?
Yeah, I think those are great points. So when I have, I mean, this is partly why couples therapy works, right? That's an hour a week that you meet when you're not mad to talk about conflict issues, right? So yeah, so you know, that's the setup. That's partly why it works because you're not having that discussion when you're already mad. So when couples are having problems, like if you're in distress, I would definitely say weekly. And I would say, you know, make sure you have an end point. So it really makes the withdrawer comfortable if they know, like, this is an hour-long conversation. And when that hour's up, we're going to go do something fun or whatever. I think the setting is important. And some people do better not being face-to-face. It's more comfortable for them. And so, like, walking and having this conversation can be very helpful sometimes for people. I'm not sure about driving when you know, your concentration is sort of divided by what's happening on the road. And if you get upset or need to take a time out or something like that. But like walking side by side wouldn't be bad. So I think every couple kind of has to decide what's the environment they're the most comfortable in, you know, and if it's useful to have a particular room or a particular space or a particular activity that you find is the most conducive to having that conversation, go for that. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. You want to have as much ease in your environment
exactly,
so that the conflict itself goes as smoothly as possible. So step one, we might say, is make an appointment to have a conflict. What would be the next step?
So then what I find when I'm working with couples who have conflict is that they try to move on to problem solving way too fast. Everyone wants to get to the solution. And so they're trying to move on to problem solving before they really understand each other. And that's not good because usually there's, you know, when you start the conversation, there's two solutions. There's my solution and your solution. And if we don't spend enough time, understanding each other, that's all we're going to have, you know? So I actually break it down into two completely separate conversations to avoid the temptation to move into problem solving. So the first conversation is solely to understand each other. No problem solving allowed. So, you know, you set up the conversation, you sit down to have the conversation, and it's what the Couples Institute in Menlo Park calls the speaker-listener model, or, you know, other therapy modalities call it that too. But basically, each person takes a turn to kind of explain what they're thinking about this particular topic. The other person reads it back to them, not what they want to say, but just reading, you know, like parroting back
reflects,
what the person's saying. Yes. And then make sure that they have it right. If there's anything that they can validate about that genuinely, then they can do that. And then they switch places. So they kind of go back and forth with each person having a turn until they really, really understand where the person's coming from on the topic. And then they stop. They stop the conversation at that point. No problem solving, just a conversation to understand each other. And then that's it. Then they set an appointment for the second conversation, which is a problem solving conversation. Now that they understand each other, the problem solving conversation is going to go a lot better. So I ask my couples to come to the problem solving conversation with like five potential solutions each.
Okay.
So, you know, after once you understand your partner, then you can go off and individually do some brainstorming about, you know, what are the now that I know how I feel and I know how my partner feels, what are the possibilities? What are the potential solutions to this problem? Not just what I initially wanted, but I got to come to this next conversation with at least five, you know, from the ridiculous to the creative to whatever, I've got to come with some five possibilities. And then the second conversation is just kind of going through each and every possibility and really talking through what would that look like? What would the potential problems be with that? What would the, you know, pros and cons of each one be? That sort of thing. So that we're considering more than just me against you, you know, two potential answers.
That's great. I think it was your book where I heard this phrase, premature problem solving.
Yes.
Yeah, which I love the alliteration. And I was like, it's so true. That's where most couples go through the premature problem solving. And that first step, however, is understanding. And it reminds me of that Thich Nhat Hanh quote that you cannot have love without understanding. You can't solve the problem if you don't understand it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a common experience in couples counseling when you start breaking down an argument in this way for one of the people to say, well, I didn't know that happened. Or that was a piece of information that I didn't have. Yeah, because you didn't spend time understanding each other before you started, you know, kind of jumping in with what you think your problem solving should be. So the understanding piece is just crucial.
Well, that's what's funny, because I was imagining a couple things. One is that as a partner explained their point of view, the other one's like, yeah, I know you've beat this into my head every time we had an argument about it. You think I'm a mess and I'm just, you know, a terrible parent or like whatever it is, because maybe it's a recurring argument and they kind of hear the same things all the time. But I also can sense like maybe some defensiveness along the lines of like, well, if you had told me that,
right,
we could have solved this 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, initially in couples therapy, you know, that's like an amusing exchange. But then I think the people kind of get the idea that like, there's a lot of value to be had in curiosity, you know? So instead of just like, oh, we're attacking each other's in the same way that we always do, how about some curiosity? Like, explain, you know, tell me more about why you feel that way. Like what prompts that feeling in you? Like, what, you know, is there something I could be doing differently? Or so being curious instead of defensive, which obviously is harder than it sounds, you know, is really a valuable, you will learn so much more if you're curious about why your partner thinks what they're thinking than if you just get defensive about it.
I love that. A lot of value is to be had with curiosity. And I think a lot of long-term partnerships forget that. They think they know their partner.
Yes. Yep. I mean, it's like, I always say, if you've been married or if you've been together 10 years, your information about each other is probably 9 years old, you know, because we stop having those conversations after we know each other, you know?
Yeah. That's a very good point. It's dated information.
It very much is. Yes.
Yeah, I know how we are. I have it on the VHS tapes right here.
Right. I mean, there's times I just don't even ask my husband something because I'm like, I know what he's going to say, you know? But that's not necessarily true. Something may have changed since the last time we had that conversation.
So I love this idea of, you know, both partners coming up with five potential solutions. But I'm also thinking about, what about those perpetual problems? You mentioned John Gottman, and I'm pretty sure he's the one that has the research that half, maybe a little bit more, of couple conflicts never get solved. So will those solutions even pan out?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the kind of topic headlines in my book is all problems can be solved. And the thing is it's just not in the sense of a solution to the problem necessarily, but the problem of having a perpetual problem can be solved. In other words, like the big issue with perpetual issues generally is that it's me against you. So if you're a spender and I'm a saver, the part of that perpetual, you know, we're never going to solve that. That's a perpetual problem. But what makes it such a problem is that I'm a saver and I think spending is wrong, or you're a spender and you think saving is wrong, or, you know, it's like a me against you thing. So perpetual problems become a me against you thing. If you can turn that so that it's like, okay, it's us as a team against the problem, right? So then if my partner and I are like, oh, okay, you're a saver, I'm a spender, We're always going to have this problem. No big deal. It's us against the problem. So it's not so much that we're ever going to solve that problem. It's that we're going to be a team in looking at the problem from time to time and coming up with new solutions. But we're not going to look at it like a bad thing. It's just going to be like, oh, okay, this is something we're going to have to discuss from time to time. No big deal. We're going to do that as a team. Yeah.
I love that. I almost feel like we need a different word than problem, because what I'm hearing from you is like all problems can be solved and they just turn into just a relatively innocuous issue that you talk about and resolve from time to time.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, it's just part of life, right? We're not always going to agree. We're two individuals. And that's the beauty of being in a relationship with someone who's not myself, you know? And so if I look at that as like, that's not so much a problem. It's just that, you know, it's going to create a need for us to communicate and work together and maybe come up with solutions that'll work for a while. And then they might not work forever. And that's no big deal. We'll just regroup and talk about it again, you know?
So far listening to you, I have three steps. Make an appointment, right? Mm-hmm. In an amenable environment. Listen to each other with curiosity. Reflect back what you've heard, which I'm doing right now. I'm reflecting back what I've heard. Feel free to correct me.
Okay.
And then we problem solve together. Maybe come up with 5, 10, you know, why stop at 5 solutions. And then is there a next step?
Well, so at the end of the problem solving conversation, what I usually have people do, I mean, I joke and say, you can each have a veto, you know, you can each have one veto that's like, that's just never going to happen. But usually the solution that you want to come up with comes naturally out of that conversation, but not always. You might come to the end of that conversation and have like 2 or 3 potentials that really might work. And so, you know, if that's the case, I have people just say, okay, let's pick one. Let's do it for a week or a month or depending on the problem, however often it occurs. And then let's circle back and have a conversation again, conversation one again, to see how we feel about how that's working out. How is it working out? How do we like it? Is there anything that came up that we didn't foresee? And if it's not our favorite, we can go back to the other potential solutions that we had. So it's kind of an experimentation at the end.
So potentially we go back to the beginning. It's like a yes. Little cycle.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'd love if you can think of one off the top of your head, just sort of an example, because we've been talking fairly in the abstract sense. We have a conflict. We want to listen, problem solve, come up with a natural solution. Do you have an example, perhaps from your work, of a conflict that a couple had and how they went through this step-by-step process?
Yeah, I'll use one that I had in my book because I think it's a really good example of, so let's say your parents and you go with your child to like a little league meeting on a Saturday morning and you realize when you're there that you have to sign up today. Like today's the last day to sign up. And one of you does not like to spend the money, thinks there's too many sports going on, whatever. And the other person is really gung-ho, like, I really want to sign our kid up for Little League. So that seems like a fight that can't wait because it has to be done right now, right? And it's true that probably you're going to have to make a decision in that moment, but that is not the moment to have that argument. So first of all, what I would say is that argument is not a surprise. That couple knew before they went there that day that they have a difference of opinions on finances, spending money on sports, spending time on sports. That they already know that, right? But they haven't talked about it. That's why it's coming up now. And arguing about it right in that moment when it's happening, you're just going to go back to your same old, you know, arguments that you've always had on that topic. So in that moment, what I would say, and this doesn't happen very often where something can't wait, but in that moment, you make the least impactful decision that you can, or you just make a decision. And then you say right then and there, we need to make an appointment to talk about this. When do you want to do that? So this couple sits down
Sounds
later.
Like a threat.
yeah, really, right? This couple sits down later and says, you know, okay, we've had this issue several times. You know, you think our kid should only do one activity at a time. I think we should fill up their schedule. You want to spend money on uniforms and sports. I don't think that's the way to go. I want to do music or whatever it is. And then they start the process of having this this discussion so they can really understand, like, where is that coming from? Maybe it's something they didn't get to do in their childhood. You know, maybe they have goals for their kid that the other person doesn't know or whatever. So that's where the understanding comes in. And then you can come up with all these different ways of potentially addressing that in the brainstorming conversation.
So in this situation, for example, what did the couple decide? What was their solutions?
Yeah. So in this particular example, the couple decided not to sign the child up that day because it was the least impactful decision to make. You know, there's always baseball seasons that'll come around again. It's, you know, it's not spending the money in favor of spending the money. So, but I think you could go either way. It's sort of like, okay, right now, let's just make this decision. But then we are going to solve this problem before it comes up again, you know?
And then, so then they have that discussion around how they want to spend money and then how would that might go.
So, in this particular case, what they decided was, you know, the one person was really into like there should only be one activity at a time. And so the solution that they came up with was one sport at a time, but maybe also another activity like music or something like that. So there could be two separate activities going on each time, but only one sport because, you know, in this particular case, it just takes a lot of time, equipment, you know, spending all day Saturday down at the soccer field or whatever. But, you know, they had all kinds of solutions like not doing sports at all, doing every sport in the book, you know, limiting sports, doing sports that don't cost as much, you know, there's all kinds of different solutions that you know, having a babysitter take them to the sports on Saturday so they don't have to sacrifice their Saturday, whatever, you know, just kind of brainstorming all kind of crazy solutions and then coming up with one that actually works.
I love that idea of just brainstorming possibilities together because yeah. I feel like it's really easy to think that there's no way out.
Yeah.
But then even the, you know, crazy solutions can still offer up some possibility that there is a way out and that the problem that you're having can be solved.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was kind of a joke in my book, but the example I gave was about laundry. And one of my possible brainstorming solutions was just throw out the clothes when they get dirty. You know what I mean? like that's the thing about brainstorming is when you start allowing yourself to think of even the silly ideas, then sometimes a good idea actually pops up. But for most of us, what happens is I already have my heart set on a possibility. And so that's the only one I can think of. That's the only thing I can see. And without brainstorming, you're just closing yourself off to maybe a lot of potential really good creative options.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the humor piece because I am kind of wondering how we make this practice of solving conflict more joyful, also like more warm, like more empathetic and compassionate and coming from the heart. So it doesn't feel like we're, you know, busting out our clipboards and writing things down.
Yeah. Well, so I always think of relationships with like a bank account metaphor, right? So what happens, you know, people will come to me and they'll be like, we have a communication problem. And I will sometimes joke and be like, no, you don't. You know, you have the same communication that you had at the beginning of your relationship. The problem is you had $1 million in the bank then, you know? So when you had a conversation that was like writing a $100 check, no problem. You had $1 million in the bank, right? But now you have $10 in the bank and you're trying to have $100 conversations, you know? And so it's not so much the communication. It's that you don't have a good balance between good and bad in your relationship, you know? So having an argument with somebody that you constantly laugh with and have a lot of fun with and do a lot of shared activities together and spend a lot of time with, that argument is going to look very different than someone that you bump into in the hall and snarl at. You know, I mean, that those two conversations are not going to be the same thing, you know?
So the money or currency in this case is just your overall experiences of happiness and joy with your partner.
Yeah. And sometimes when couples come in, honestly, I'm like, first we need to work on the deposits. You know, we can't even start with these withdrawal conversations because you have nothing in the bank to draw from. So like, let's start having fun together again. Let's start going on dates. Let's start spending time together, having great fun conversations and laughing together and doing shared activities that we both find exciting. Then you're going to really have the currency to have negative conversations without that becoming like personal or, you know, overly critical.
I love this metaphor. Like, what are some other, what's the best return on investment in relationships?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, it's probably different for every person. I personally think you cannot underestimate like laughter and appreciation. I get so much resistance to being appreciative of your partner. And I'm like, it's free, you know, like it doesn't cost you anything to be appreciative. And it puts so much money in the bank. So it's like, why would you not, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. I see that with my parents. Like my mom always cooks. And the rule is whoever cooks doesn't have to clean. So my dad always cleans. Mm-hmm. Happens every time. And every time my dad goes, thanks for making delicious dinner, honey. And she goes, thanks for cleaning.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't have to say that.
Totally. It's your job, but, right? Yeah.
That's what happens every time.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I like how you said, appreciation is free. And what you appreciate appreciates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's, you know, it's funny to me when I meet people who are resistant to that, like, but usually it's people who never got any appreciation as a kid. It's like you did your chores and no one said thank you because that was your job. Right. So that's the attitude they bring into adulthood. But, you know, when you have a relationship like your parents where it's like, yeah, it's their job, but that doesn't mean I can't say thanks, you know? And so you're just making deposits and that is going to come back to support you when you have to have a withdrawal conversation.
So there's this little idea coming up listening to you because I know you're a therapist. And as you know, I'm also in therapy school, and we're learning all about different theories. And when I think about this approach to healthy conflict, I'm like, is this a psychodynamic approach or more of a cognitive behavioral approach? And for those like unfamiliar, like I feel like therapy always has to juggle this. Well, let's work on the current feeling, the current thoughts that you have, solve the problematic thinking that's happening in this moment, which I feel like nowadays is the more popular approach. And it tends to be pretty effective to work on someone's thought patterns in the here and now.
Sure.
Versus a more, say, psychodynamic approach, which is like this incredible archaeological dig that goes deep into all one's psychological complexes and childhood trauma and different things like this. So yeah, when I'm working with my partner on solving conflicts, on, you know, on those, as you meant, what was it? Chores, money, in-laws, sex. How much of this is an in the moment, let's figure this out and come up with a solution? And how much is this is actually, these are deep rooted from everything that happened to me at an earlier age that we also have to get to the bottom of if we are to finally find a solution.
Yeah. I mean, I love theories. Theories are great, you know, but I have a problem with like, this is the theory. And I think, you know, probably many people do. That's why so many therapists describe themselves as eclectic these days or, you know, integrative or whatever. But it's all of it, right? I mean, when you're having a conflict with your partner, there's some very here and now practical things that need to be decided and need to be done. But the way that you feel about the different options can't help but be based in your history and who you are and all of your experiences and all of that. And that might be important in this particular argument, or it might not, you know, but it all comes into play. So that's why I feel like, you know, if you only use one theory, you're going to miss the richness of, as Jon Kabat-Zinn would call, like the full catastrophe. You know what I mean? Like you want the full catastrophe. You want all of it. You want how the childhood affects where you're at. You want how your past relationships affect where you're at. You want how you're just feeling emotionally right now. You want the practicalities of solving it. And not all of that comes into every conflict, but it could. And so I think knowing a little bit about why all of that is important can just help you navigate when a conversation gets really complex like that.
It's true. There's a lot of information out there.
And there is.
It can all be very useful in our relationships. Yeah. So as we're winding down, I really appreciate this really wonderful step-by-step process to having healthy conflict for a happy relationship. And you mentioned that that's love. It's a skill. It's something we can develop. So once I've got my A+ mastered skill in healthy conflict, what are some other skills that you find are just really key and crucial for close, intimate relationships.
One thing would be like not taking yourself so seriously. You know, I mean, this is supposed to be fun. Like, yes, I agree, relationships are work, you know, but it's supposed to enrich your life. It's supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be a good thing. And so sometimes it's like, you know, keeping that balance between, again, the bank account sort of metaphor, like keeping the balance between the things that we need to work out and just enjoying each other, you know, and understanding that this is just a moment in time and it doesn't have to be the deal breaker for everything, you know. The other thing too is just like so many times when people are contemplating splitting up in my office, I find that, you know, it's not love that's the problem really. It's that they haven't figured out how to sort of navigate working together with each other. And if they split up and they get into a different relationship, it's like, you're still going to bring yourself with you, you know? So I think it's like that personal work that you talked about too. It's like always constantly improving yourself so that you're the best partner that you can be, you know? And there's just there's a really wonderful thing that happens in relationship when you just start being your best self, regardless of what the other person is doing. And you just commit to like, I'm doing this because this is who I want to be. Not because the other person like deserves it or because things are going well. That doesn't matter. I'm being this way because it's the kind of person I want to be in a relationship. And if both people are doing that, it's probably going to be a lot smoother.
So we're running low on time, but you opened up the box. So I want to just ask a little follow-up question because you did mention the idea of splitting up and the idea of divorce.
Yeah.
So we already talked about that all problems can be solved. So are there ultimate problems? Are there total deal breakers that you think two people should probably just separate?
Yes. I mean, abuse for sure is on the top of that list. You know, I mean, I am kind of a pro-commitment therapist. I'm trying to help people stay together, but I absolutely do not believe that every relationship should last. Some relationships should not last, you know? So for sure, if there's abuse, and I'm not even talking about physical abuse, but if there's, you know, if there's verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse in a relationship, it's just simply not okay. And then you throw in like personality disorders, people who really cannot negotiate or compromise. And that's not as common as TikTok makes it seem, but it does exist, you know? And then probably substance use issues. You know, if somebody just isn't going to make the effort to come clean, or they are only willing to have conflict when they're drunk or whatever, that's just probably not gonna turn into a productive relationship anytime soon.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Thank you. So thank you so much, Lisa Gray, for coming onto the show. Your book is Healthy Conflict, Happy Couple, How to Let Go of Blame and Grow Stronger Together. And I do have to finish by asking the question I ask all of my guests, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
I wish everyone knew that love is a beautiful thing, and it's not sufficient to have a healthy long-term relationship. So enjoy the love part. I love the love part. That's my favorite part. But also build your relationship skills. Learn what's out there to learn so that you can preserve that feeling of love instead of it just kind of fading away over time.
Makes perfect sense. Love is a beautiful thing, but yeah, we can't just fully trust in this thing just to happen.
Right.
There's skills we have to develop and things we need to learn. So wonderful. Thank you so much, Lisa Gray. For our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
My website is lisagraymft.com. So my last name is G-R-A-Y, and then MFT is for Marriage Family Therapist. I am on Instagram at lisagraymft, and also on Instagram, Therapy Book Nook. Those are my book reviews. And I'm on Twitter as gray_therapy.
Nice. I had already followed your first Instagram, but now I need to find Therapy Book Nook. Love
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like every therapist I know is always saying, I don't have time to read. So I'm like, okay, I'll review all that. Yeah.
Well, it is funny because This is one of the things I've already learned in therapy school. When a person says they don't have time for something, what they really mean is it's a problem of priorities. And as you Absolutely. Mentioned, you don't watch TV. You read books. Right. You've prioritized yeah. books over things. So if we're right. looking to listen to podcasts more, read more, work on love more, it's a matter of prioritizing these things.
Absolutely. You'll do it if you want to.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Lisa Gray. You're just a fountain of wisdom, and I appreciate the work that you do, and your couples are lucky to have you, and all of our listeners are lucky to have you on this show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
Wow, what a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you remember all of the valuable lessons that Lisa Gray shared with us today, including falling in love is not enough. We have to have the skills to maintain a loving relationship. While loving someone comes naturally, having a good relationship is a skill we can develop. The information is out there, such as the work of Stan Tatkin, the Gottmans, and Dr. Sue Johnson. We must recognize that conflict is normal in relationships, and we can shift our attitude to see conflict as a good thing. There is a beauty and a skill in letting things go. When you have conflict, set up a time to talk about it when you're both not emotionally charged. That way, when you do talk about it, you're able to listen. There is a lot of value to be had with curiosity, and we can all be curious without being defensive. Then once we understand our partner, we can brainstorm solutions, even the silly ones, because laughter puts money in your relationship account. So be sure to make deposits in your relationship account with new experiences, fun times, appreciation, and all that good stuff, so that when conflict does arise and you need to take a little bit of money out, you still end up with a positive, loving, and warm relationship. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to ZachBeach.com or TheHeartCenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.